This is the Living Legacy Project interview with Julian Montague on August 21st, 2012. Julian, what inspired you to want to be an artist?
I don't know if it was... I think it was... My father was an art historian and an artist himself. I mean, to some degree. So I grew up in a house where that was always a possibility. My uncle is a composer who's fairly well known in England and Europe. So he was a minimalist in the 60s and then does sort of more elaborate stuff, but sort of in the avant-garde. So those sort of possibilities of art was always something that, you know, was an option. So, and I was encouraged to do. So I guess from a young age, I was exposed to things like that and to a lot of museums and that sort of thing. So it was sort of there from the beginning.
When did you make the conscious decision to be like, this is something I want to pursue as a career choice?
Well, that was a little weirder. I didn't go to college for art or design or graphic design. I got to Buffalo Arts Academy as an art major at the high school. But I kind of had, it was not the greatest environment at the time in that school. Not that I didn't enjoy it, but it wasn't really, somehow I really didn't want to be an art major in college, or I just wasn't interested in pursuing that at the time. And so I went to college for like media studies, but the entirely theoretical sort. And then I kind of realized, I became more aware of graphic design while I was in college and realized that that was something I wanted to do. But it was very, I mean, I entered college in 92 and finished in 96. So the technological changes that were happening in that period were pretty enormous. You know, like the internet really kind of arrived then. All of a sudden, all these computer programs for graphic design were kind of available. So all of a sudden, to study graphic design or to do graphic design becomes something much more accessible. So I sort of realized everything I wanted to do right after I left college, but then started pursuing and realized what I needed to learn for design, started kind of pursuing that on my own. I'd always imagined that I would kind of do art things on the side, and I'd done some things in college, but not in any official way. So my sort of vision was that I would at the time I was interested in like writing about music and culture, and I mean I was sort of in that, I don't know, interested in criticism, I guess, to some degree. I mean, writing, but that's the sort of stuff I wrote about in college. And I went to Hampshire, which is a very writing-intensive place, and so you have to really, and, you know, very theoretical kind of stuff. But in any case, so when I realized properly calling myself an artist didn't happen for quite a while. It was pursued, once I came back to Buffalo, spent a year in Europe, or in England and Ireland, and I just worked on a lot of art, kind of illustration projects on my own. Came back here, looked into going back to school, but that was just too much. So I decided to kind of learn Photoshop in Quark Express, like the layout programs. I took some classes, and then I ended up getting a job where I kind of learned on the job at the Buffalo Museum of Science as part of a grant for this where we were designing science education materials.
About what year was that?
That would have been 1990, the beginning of 1998. And that eventually would become the only real job I ever had. I eventually became art director, and that became its own entity. And I worked there until 2005, or 2006. So my aspirations were really to be a graphic designer, and I started in 1999. I did the first version of the Stray Shopping Cart project, which I'll probably talk about more later. But that, and it was really a graphic design project as much as it was kind of a conceptual art piece. That kind of took off, and things, one thing led to another. So eventually I kind of started calling myself an artist and, you know, pursuing that. But it wasn't really my goal to start with. I mean, something I wanted to do, but so it was a weirdly sort of organic process.
What would you say was your goal when you started to do that?
Well, I wanted to do something that would be kind of like an art project, but I wanted something that kind of bridged art and design a little bit would be good for me as a designer. You know, just something that could promote me, like, you know, because I mean, my aspirations in graphic design were, I guess, and still are, you know, I'm interested in sort of the higher level, you know, where you get to do really interesting stuff, and I saw like kind of this project as being a, kind of a tool to do that in a way. So, because there are all sorts of designers doing projects that are like art projects, but, you know, are somehow still in the realm of graphic design. But it wasn't a very thought out, I mean, my whole journey is not really a very thought out plan. And I didn't go to graduate school, and I don't have any intention to. It wouldn't look very good on paper, you know, but it sort of has worked out so far anyway for me.
After you moved on from the Buffalo Museum of Science, what was your next transition?
Well, that transition, basically, By the time I was getting ready to leave that job, I'd gone out of 3 days a week there because I needed to write my shopping cart book, which I'd gotten the contract for in March, and they wanted like the finished files for the thing like the middle of June. So it was a very, very short amount of time. And I was getting married in May, so it was like really tight. So, and I was designing the book myself, so like everything was kind of, you know, on me. So I went down to 3 days a week there, and then I had a show in, I had a big solo show, Shopping Carts, in New York and Chelsea. Ended up selling, it ended up being like 17 pieces to the Margulies collection, which is in Miami. Margulies is the collection at the Warehouse. And that was kind of enough money for me to like go out on my own and quit my job. I mean, it wasn't that much money, but it was just, you know, it was enough that I felt like I could go freelance and survive. I think there were some other sales that happened around that time. But, and then I did, I went to Miami, or Marty Margulies flew me down to Miami and I installed it in his collection, this installation of shopping carts with all the lines and everything. So,
you come from a really interesting perspective from, you know, graphic design and how that melds into fine art. And so I'm curious who some of your most important influences have been.
I guess it's fun, you know, one of the shows I remember really liking, I mean, I grew up right down the street from the Albright Knox, like on Bird. So I went there a lot for openings and things, like with my parents. And I think the show that I really remember making an impression on me was this Hamish Fulton show in 1987. And he's, you know, like this sort of land artist from the 70s. Or, you know, he did walks, very much like, what's the other guy that does walks? Long, Richard Long. Anyway, but he had all these things like lots of text on the walls of, you know, just like these huge like red letters in Helvetica, you know, like words, like things that he'd seen, and then these photographs with text on them, and you know, sort of walks through, you know, hills in Wales or Chile or whatever, and it's kind of cairns and piled up stones and things like that. So I remember really liking that and connecting to that, and I think I'd always really been into like album covers and stuff like that. I mean, that was a very something that was important to me, and that kind of graphic design was something that I was into. And I mean, my father was kind of like, my father had done some like record covers for my uncle's music and stuff like that, or illustrations. And my father taught animation stuff at one point. So I don't know, there were other kinds of like, I guess I feel like I was exposed to some sort of certain kinds of like 60s and 70s stuff. Like, I remember we used to bring home like Yellow Submarine on like 60mm film from the college that he worked at, and we watched it and stuff like that. I guess I was kind of aware of graphic design one way or the other, even though I wasn't really calling it that. Or maybe I was, because my father would have known about that. But that show, as I look back, I think that one, I mean, that was something that I really liked. And a lot of my other things that I ended up liking later on were in you know, stuff like the, you know, the early Russian stuff, you know, like Rodchenko and these guys who were doing graphic design and doing you know, art, and you know, sort of bridging those gaps. I mean, it's such a different setting, it's not really a good point of comparison. But you know, I admired that kind of thing, and I admired people that did things in different disciplines, or you know, sort of churned out a lot of work in different areas. And also, I mean, and then just also again back to like later on, back to album covers, I was really into Vaughn Oliver and 23 Envelope. They were this design firm that did all of the 4AD album covers. So like in the 80s and 90s, like that's the label that had like the Cocteau Twins and Dead Can Dance and all these other bands that had this really distinctive look, which I don't necessarily like as much now, but at the time it seemed really pretty cool to me. I was also exposed to like a lot of my uncle spent time in Poland. So we sort of had a lot of these weird like 70s like Polish posters and things like that. So I was very into that kind of thing. I was interested, I mean, my interest really was in probably like connected to music, like that kind of design. But then I was into skateboarding as well, like heavily. So that was a very graphic design kind of, you know, that world in the late 80s and early 90s, you know, it was all about like magazines and graphics on boards. And, you know, it's a very visual thing. And then Transworld Skateboarding, which is this magazine that I later found out was art directed by David Carson, who was one of the kind of most groundbreaking designers of the late 80s and early 90s. So this guy, like, I didn't know it at the time, but this magazine I was reading, which I thought was kind of like the slick skateboarding magazine, but it's actually like being talked about in graphic design circles because it was the most sort of like forward page layout and like crazy graphics around. So, you know, that, all of that I think went into kind of my visual world for the most part. But the original question about design and art, if anything, like, I was more excited by graphic design and then kind of was looking for art that, you know, connected to graphic design in a way. And I've never been that interested in kind of getting too into these categories. You know, I mean, for me, it's just a very simple thing of like, if it's for a client, then you can call it graphic design. I mean, there's graphic design in art, but if I'm the author of it, you know, it doesn't matter if it's straight graphic design and I want to call it art, it's art, you know. And I just have like almost no interest in any academic debates around these sorts of subjects. And in the same way, that's like, the way I've developed what I do now, I do both of these things, and there's a huge crossover, and I think it benefits me as a designer and as an artist. I mean, in a professional sense, like some people try to obscure what they do kind of for their day job because they think it will reflect negatively on their art. Or people have a much more romantic idea about art, or like, I mean, some painter told me at some party in New York, oh, you can't do both things, you know, or something like that, and I find that pretty absurd. So I'm all about this sort of cross-pollination and kind of doing the same thing. And you know, there are artists out there that kind of, I guess like maybe the most famous was like Pei White, who, you know, does these like installation pieces and sculptures, and then she does graphic design. She sort of carved out an interesting role for herself as a designer artist. I don't think I've done that yet, but I think I've done, but I think, you know, there's so much graphic design in what I do in my art that it makes sense that, you know, it makes sense to people that I would, you know, have a foot in both worlds. And in a weird way, like, I've gotten attention from my shopping cart project, it's gotten attention from the design world. Like, Stephen Heller, like, wrote about it in one of the, you know, interviewed me for one of his books, and, you know, he's pretty much, you know, he seems to be the author of almost every book on graphic design out there. So, you know, reached that audience in a way that I'd, kind of was my original intention way back. So I really appreciate that, you know, that it speaks to that world as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's so fascinating because in many ways, you know, the viewers that you might be reaching either with your graphic design and your art, but primarily like people who are so into graphic design have such a keen eye for aesthetics, you know, and so you're kind of tapping into that as well as with your art. Is there anything else you'd like to say? And I know you mentioned you're not interested in the academic debate about it, but is there anything else you'd like to say about the difference between your graphic design work and your art and how they mix in together or are separate?
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference. Like, one of the parts of my secondary occupants project, which is about the intersection of animals and architecture, has many smaller projects really into the same kind of conceptual space. But, like, I make these fake books that look like they're books about various... they kind of connect to that idea of the animals and architecture, and I make them look like vintage books, like designed, you know, from the 60s or 70s. And in real life, I design, but, you know, in my real... Sometimes I design book covers, you know, for clients. But it's a completely different process, even though the result is can somewhat be similar. But, you know, I might have, when I'm designing a fake book that I want to illustrate some idea, like, I may have the idea for the image in my head before I've even written the title, you know, so... I'm sort of like, I can make it up any way I want to, or, you know, it could be backwards or forwards. I may have the title and then illustrate it, but it's very different from being given a set title. Even if you're not given any art direction, you know, for anything else, for a real book, it's completely different. So the process is different in that way. I think of it as using the tools of graphic design, you know, it is functioning the graphic design functions in a similar way, or, you know, you're using it to express, you know, ideas and tones and moods and all of that sort of thing. But I'm using it in the service of my ideas as opposed to, you know, a client's needs. I mean, that's the main difference. So.
Awesome. Can you talk about your art and what you create and why you create it?
I guess, well, my art is, I guess, really, I do a lot of different things, but I suppose that basically, really my art of the last 10 plus years kind of can be divided into two projects. The first one is a stray shopping cart project, which essentially is a project in which I designed a taxonomy that allows you to identify shopping carts based on the situations in which you find them. So it's, in other words, there are it breaks down to this like system of like true strays or false strays and true strays, and then these subcategories of those. And the idea is that, you know, they're this sort of stray shopping cart phenomenon, until now, you know, hasn't had any language to allow you to speak about it. So kind of by art, I mean, for me, the goal of the project is, there's sort of multiple goals, but, you know, one of them is kind of this, well, it's this exploration of the urban environment and kind of a illuminating these peripheral spaces, which is a term I use a lot in speaking about my work. It kind of all deals with this. Like, so kind of, you know, showing what's going on in sort of this system of this ecology of shopping carts that's happening in the urban environment. And the second part of that project really is kind of this cognitive thing where it's like, what, when you name something or you make the system, then people, it makes people see things they couldn't see before. So, you know, even if it's ridiculous or absurd or a joke, once they've sort of seen my work, then when they go places, they see shopping carts everywhere. So I'm kind of interested in that. I mean, it's a powerful thing that one has, that you can almost, against someone's will, you know what I mean? I think a lot of people like the project because they see it as a political statement of some kind, which I don't think it is. It's open to that. I mean, there's also the individual photographs also have their own sort of emotional tone and, you know, can be sad or funny and kind of in that. So they're open in that way. But for me, the project, there's a lot of text in the project, and I write it in the character of someone who takes shopping carts very seriously. And it's like a naturalist who's exploring, who's observing this animal. You know, that's essentially like how I do it. So it's all written very seriously in this voice. So it becomes funny because it's sort of so like kind of absurdly like, sort of dry in that way. For me, like, I don't, like, I'm not interested in political or making sort of statement art, because that's easy. I mean, it's easy to do. And if anything, like, what this project was like undermining the people that do use shopping carts in this sort of shorthand, or even say it in the text of the project, you know, for too long the shopping cart has been seen as, you know, like a symbol of urban decay, or, you know, just sort of this oversimplified. So I'm sort of making it complicated and showing that it's not about, particularly about homeless people or anything else. You know, it's so much more complicated and really rich than that. And for me, I'm interested in art sort of, you know, revealing nuance and stuff like that. So I really, for me, I find political kind of art, not that it can't be good, but it's just such, I don't know, it's a weird situation because so much of it is like preaching to the choir. And then, you know, beyond that, it's weird just because art is set up to kind of, to explore nuance and subtlety, and then you're just hitting someone over the head with a hammer, you know, which is much more, I mean, graphic design is perfectly good for making statements, you know, in a clear and concise, you know, way. And I don't know. So I really am not interested in that kind of, in being in that area. So I want some sort of neutrality in a way, or just to be removed from that. Presenting this information so you can do what you want with it. I think if you go into something, even with a, and even from an environmental standpoint, say, like, even, I mean, there are plenty of things I believe or I think are important issues, you know, whatever environmental causes and everything else, but there's no question that looking at things through that lens keeps you from seeing certain other things. You know, if you look at everything through, like, an activist lens, or this is a crisis, or this is, even if you're looking at it as a problem, like, in my project, I don't even see shopping carts as a problem. It's just a thing that is, you know, so I'm sort of interested in what is, how the world as it exists, you know, and I think if you're too focused on this, like, you know, what the problem is, then you just, it cuts off all of these different points of view.
You just spoke about the first half.
The first half,
of your,
yeah,
10 years.
Yeah, so that project is still, I mean, for the most part finished, but I do things every once in a while. Like, I've done some performance things where I just, like, read from the project. I mean, I guess I've only done it really once in Toronto, with sort of in conjunction with this sort of performance art theater company. And then I still show it when people ask. And I could see an opportunity, there could be the right opportunity to do something new with it. Since 2008, I've been working on, or 2007, I've been working on a project that would eventually become what's now called Secondary Occupants Collected and Observed. And that essentially, it started as a project about spiders. And now it's kind of coming back around to being a project about spiders again, or more work with spiders. But I basically thought that, you know, I'd spent all this time in the urban space, kind of behaving as a naturalist, you know, in these peripheral spaces, and I wanted to then take that into the interior, you know, kind of explore the interior of houses and homes. And I mean, I've always been, when I was a little kid, I was very into, like, science and kind of naturalist stuff. I mean, but not in a rigorous way. Like, I didn't have that kind of discipline to, like, pursue that sort of thing, but it's always been like the aesthetics of it, of guidebooks, of all that stuff. I've sort of really been interested in that in the same way since I was quite young. So this is all really kind of a continuation of those interests. So in a way, I was, you know, dealing with the shopping cart as if it were this wild animal, and so then I wanted to get back to, you know, proper, you know, actual nature in a way. So I picked spiders, which, you know, they're everywhere. They're in our houses. You know, we're sort of, they're in every room you'll ever be in. There'll be a spider, some trace of a spider. So I thought that was interesting. So I wanted to, as I was the shopping cart project, I had this sort of fictional, character at the core, that it's this lens that I kind of look through. So in a way, like, I'm a bit removed from my own work in the sense that I don't think of it as, there's, like, for the shopping cart project, there's like a fictional Julian Montague that is that, you know, the author of that book, or the shopping cart, the field guide to shopping carts. So I decided, I mean, and that project is also very honest. Like, everything in my system actually works. You know what I mean? Every photograph is where I said it was. It's not posed, anything like that. So the project with spiders, I was dealing with a subject that was already, you know, it's already been broken. You know, the taxonomy is already there. You know, all of that stuff sort of exists. And so I was going into it with the idea of not using as much text and having it be more visual and having my kind of character that I was operating through being much weirder, more like, you know, opaque, you know, you don't really know where he's coming from. I mean, it was essentially finding this way to give myself license to do all sorts of strange things. And somehow for me, like, these projects have to have this functioning conceptual space, which I think I've actually kind of altered the space of this project now. So it's kind of full of paradoxes, but I'll get to that stuff in a minute. So the idea was I collected a spider, killed it, put it in a jar, preserved it. Then I'd look it through a microscope, make a drawing of its face, take that drawing and make it into a fabric banner, which I made out of like canvas and sort of felt. And then I'd hang that banner back up where I found the spider. And it would be attached to a building in one way, like inside a room or on the outside of a building. And then photograph that. So I photographed it with a medium format camera and had a very large photograph of this sort of scene. So it'd be this mundane scene with this really simplified kind of spider face against like a black banner. So it was sort of the magnification of the presence of this animal, and then also this kind of ironic memorial to the spider that had to die for this, you know, for me to see it well enough to kind of mark it there. And it's sort of like, you know, spending time in the world of spiders. You know, it's a lot of it, it's about death. I mean, there's a lot of death in the shopping cart project too, where, you know, sort of like at least some undertone of existential dread, you know, which is impossible to escape, I think. So, you know, in the sort of mangled shopping carts out on their own are kind of often read in sort of anthropomorphic kind of dead body kind of way. And so in this, you know, spiders are, I mean, this world that's going on around us, you know, in the corners is pretty grim. It's this evolutionary play that's been playing out for, you know, 20 million years that spiders have been setting these traps and catching things. So it's, I don't know, that part of it too is this kind of like, and I'm trying to make this kind of totem, it's this like totemic kind of, you know, representation of this kind of life or death thing. So I started with that. That was the first stage. It was actually called To Know the Spiders, which was a kind of a adaptation of a famous, although not famous in the sense that anyone would know the reference, but there's a book called How to Know the Spiders, which is an arachnology guide. And when I first saw these illustrations of spider faces where it shows the distribution of the eyes and the jaws and kind of gave me the idea for doing these portraits, because they are something that arachnologists use, depending on the species, to illustrate it. So it was called To Know the Spiders as opposed to How to Know the Spiders. So that was, I did a show in Chelsea at Black and White Gallery of that work, which didn't really go over, well, nothing really happened. I mean, it didn't really sell anything, and I don't think it got written up. Well, it did get a good preview little nod in New York Magazine, but other than that, nothing happened. After, I went on to sort of develop the world of that project, and the next big thing I did with it was setting up an installation where I'd have like a map of an abandoned house, out of, you know, kind of establishing where all these animals would sort of be in this abandoned house. It was sort of made up, but it was like, you know, kind of composite of what was possible. And lines would kind of come out of this and go up with banners hanging from the ceiling, and I expanded beyond spiders to be the animal, you know, the mammals and birds and insects. So it's really about this, the way that animals exist. In an abandoned house, animals are part of this process that turns this interior space into exterior space in both physical and conceptual way. So, you know, they're literally like carpenter ants are taking this building apart. And then in another sense, like having these animals in your house is this way that it's the way we've constructed this space. It kind of violates that and kind of is turning inside into outside. And again, my sort of character is clearly getting weirder because there's a little bit of text in this one, in the installation of this, where it's like kind of encouraging hints that you should be going out and doing this sort of thing, like finding things and hanging banners and stuff. But that installation I've shown a number of different ways and spaces, and it kind of can expand and contract depending on where it's shown. One of the more recent things I've done with this project is I have a blog that's about modernist book covers. So for the last 3 years, I've been posting a book cover more or less every day that I find in thrift. And it has to be from between like 1950 and 1980 and kind of have some modernist design style to it or some graphic quality. So after kind of curating this blog for a year and a half, I think, by the time I thought of this. I had the idea to, like, make these kind of books, reading material for this character, you know, but imagining a kind of mid-century where people really cared about this issue of animals and architecture. So I started making these fake books and making them look very realistic and designing them, you know, as I mentioned before. And it became an interesting thing. I mean, but it kind of altered the... It got me more into the realm of fiction, you know, in a way that I hadn't before. And I don't know that I've completely resolved, like, how it shapes this conceptual space that, you know, this guy is in. But it's just getting sort of weirder and weirder. So I also make these posters and record covers. And the books, like, have... Some of them are only obliquely connected to the theme. Like, I have this, like, fictional Polish playwright, you know, who has these, like... who just clearly just uses the animals as metaphors a lot. I mean, sometimes not even. I mean, just there's one called, like, the Drake and the Paper Wasp. And, like, so that's sort of off to the side. And some are more direct ones, like Intuition and Pest Control, and just sort of, like, hinting at these fringes of kind of, like, as if there was this world really concerned with pest control in an intellectual way or in a kind of fringy way. So these books have... So I've become a big part of the project. And now I've become... They sort of exist on their own, and I've shown them on their own. I have a show coming up of just posters and books, like, in France next summer. So, and I've sold a number of them. Like, I've sold, like, I think 30 of the books, which if I'd known it was going to happen, I would have done bigger edition sizes. But people seem to buy them as sculptures. But for me, like, the most valuable thing about... I mean, I like them now. I like them in one sense. They because they sort of are these realistic objects, they sort of exist in a strange way in the world, and that they could kind of slip back into the bookshelf and disappear. I mean, the interior of the book is whatever book I decided to wrap this cover around. But in the when shown with the installation of the rest of the work, the book is really a way to get ideas into the head of the viewer, you know, make these sort of connections. Because a closed book, even if you know it's fake, you sort of, it at least pushes you down that road of kind of having to think about what's in it or what would that be about, you know. So it's an interesting tool in that way. And it's, but on their own, it becomes more mysterious and weird. So we'll see what happens with it.
It's interesting because exactly as you expressed it, you know, that you're using these methods to get people to an even more conceptual space mm-hmm. with your work, which is already pretty conceptual. I'd like to talk to you about the relationship between the characters you create and yourself and kind of how that developed.
Fictional characters. I mean, this is the big thing, is that people don't understand that. Like, that shopping cart, that super meticulous kind of way of thinking is not, I don't think, naturally, like... It's perhaps something I aspire to, but it's not something that I... It's not the way I naturally am. So that character really... I mean, I'm not... People think, oh, he must be so, like, obsessive-compulsive or whatever, and I'm not at all. Like, if anything, like, I have a hard time, you know, keeping it together. And that project is a huge effort to, like, just think in this way and set up these rules to this system, you know, and follow them through. It is like being an actor or something. You know what I mean? Really, like, you're really trying to do something different than what you really are. So in that sense, I feel quite removed from that. You know what I mean? I am the creator of it, so clearly it's from me. But it does not reflect upon me in the way that people often think that it does, you know. It's more like I'm drawn to these, like, the aesthetics. And I mean, this idea of, like, using... the way that science, you know, kind of is this way that explains the world. Or, you know, this kind of investigation. So all of my projects are investigations. All of my work is about... It is some looking outward kind of thing, where I'm going out into the world and finding something interesting about it and turning that into art. I have almost no interest in... Not entirely true, but in art that kind of derives its value from the way it fits into art history or, you know, speaks to other art. Like, that to me, I do not care about. Like, I want to actually go address something that exists and is real and then kind of, like... I mean, maybe somebody's built fiction off of that. And anyway, I'm making references in that I do these modernist design covers and I'm clearly speaking to certain, you know, style. And I mean, so I make references. It's very important for me that my work is not... It is about, you know... It is going out into the world. It's an investigation. Because, I mean, many other... In other disciplines, and people are very wrapped up in, like, whatever, painting, what is painting? And, like, even, you know, like, for me, photography, maybe you could look at my work and think it deals with this. I don't think many people do, but, you know, I don't care what a photograph is on some level. Or do you know what I mean? Like, that, there's a whole set of questions which are interesting in their own way, but it's not what my work's about. Like, it's not about the medium. Like, the medium is just a set of tools to get to an idea, to get to, like, kind of to a space.
And you mix the mediums very well.
Well, I think I I mean, a little bit of that is graphic design kind of background too, you know what I mean, where you're shuffling around images and graphics and you kind of make, you know, you, and in that sense, I feel weird, you know, even though I've had, like, I guess about most of my, I've done so much photography, but I feel weird calling myself a photographer because I didn't, when you hang around people that are photographers in quotes, they, I don't know, they seem to talk about very different things than I do. you know, or they're just like, you know, someone like John Opera, you know, his work is very academic and very much about photography. You know, and I think it's great and it's interesting, but it's like, it's not, it's a world away from what, how I use photography. You know what I mean? Maybe there are times when our photographs may function in the same way, but like we're going into very different intentions, I think. And also in a sense, I feel like, yeah, photographers own a lot more equipment than I do. So.
You know, getting back to essentially your character development for these large series that take up years, in a sense it is this incorporation of performance art into your work.
I think that's how I've thought of it, in the sense that to me, for the Schoppinger project, it was very important, the idea was very important that I was there, you know, going to these weird places. Like part of it was the act of doing, you know, going and documenting these carts in, you know, in all these like obscure kind of, you know, blank spaces in the environment. So I have felt like that's, yeah, that process is kind of, it is a performance in that sense. Although that almost never translates to any kind of real performance. But yeah, I mean that's part of the whole thing.
So you just kind of answered my next question a little bit, which is talking about the totality of your work and some of the different themes that have emerged.
I am interested in the natural world, you know, in the sense that, I mean, evolution, all these things are really, I guess, the things that I think about, you know, the what it means to be alive and all the rest of it. You know?
Yeah, I think that that's so interesting too, that you said that you've struggled so much with writing, just writing a chapter or two, because I think that that's what is really testament that you are a visual artist. You like to get people to think differently through images and through visual and mixing media and doing it in a completely different way than sitting down and putting it in paragraph form. Would you say that?
In a way, I mean, yeah, and I guess in a way, yeah, right. I mean, I guess it's because you're making these things that are deliberately hard to articulate, you know what I mean? And then you need to articulate them. Or it's much more fun to have someone else write about you, and then you can think, oh, you know, this very academic way, even though you kind of feel like they're only half right, or you're not, you know what I mean? Or they're viewing things very differently than you would, but it's most of it more fun. On the other hand, I'm writing this chapter because I really think I should, and I should, it actually helps me, I suppose, to like kind of, you know, think in this way and have to write this, and it would, you know, and you know, a lot of, I've written too much about my own work, but a lot of artists clearly in the past, you know, written a lot, you know, so I do.
Can writing ever cut it? Can writing ever convey?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. I suppose not. You know, I guess in this situation, like in this chapter, there'll be images and stuff, so there'll be some window, and these days people always have access to like the internet, so you know, it's not as like a removed, you know, not like the Renaissance and you write descriptions of paintings or whatever. So, yeah, but I mean, you know, I'm just going to do, I guess it's a good opportunity for me to kind of, it's much easier for me to talk in a format like this about my ideas than it is to write them down.
Have you thought about approaching this chapter you have to write as if it's another character that you're developing?
That wasn't an idea at one point, but that doesn't make things, that makes life harder in a lot of ways. So, I haven't. And I'm probably in for more writing too, because I'm now kind of co-editing this. There's this online magazine called Antenna, which deals with the animal and visual culture, kind of the postmodern animal in a lot of ways. They did an interview with me about the Stray Shopping Cart project years ago, and now I'm kind of co-editing an issue on spiders, so I'm in the process of looking for artists to deal with spiders in various ways. So we'll see what comes out of that. But
it does seem that curiosity is a big part of your work, and also, you know, your background with the Science Museum and your perspectives as a naturalist, even as a youth. Are there other ways in which you see your curiosity exhibiting in your life and your work and your future endeavors?
Yeah, I mean, I guess curiosity, I think, is a sort of a fundamentally important thing. I mean, I guess the downside of it is I probably spend time, or I'm, you know, sort of have an information addiction, you know, with the internet, which I think is becoming a problem, you know, and not necessarily productive information, or you know what I mean, just the sort of like endless feed of political information and things like that that I think is, ends up taking up too much of my brain, you know, without really benefiting me. Yeah, I don't know where that is going to take me exactly. And it's weird, too, because I'm very involved in popular culture, you know what I mean, and music and all these other things, like and in stupid popular culture, too, like I, you know, reality shows and all this stuff. I mean, from a critical point of view, but as someone who enjoys bad things and, you know, like that kind of thing. But I don't feel like my work ever really touches on that world, and I don't know why, in a way, I feel like I'm drawn into, like, this primal reality of, you know what I mean? In some way, that stuff is all ephemeral. And in a way, like, something like spiders is somehow, you know, for real, you know? Or even, like, the shopping carts, you know, and I don't know. I mean, even though I may get into a completely different area eventually, but I feel like it keeps kind of, like, this, the natural world draws me back. Or the natural world as it intersects with, you know, our world, more than anything.
Is that maybe part of the balance for you? That you can have these really banal sort of, you know, interests and that sort of thing in your personal life, and yet in a lot of your work, it really is exploring and creating the languages to explore something deeper.
I feel like I never really turn off that thing, that kind of thing anyway. Do you know what I mean? Like, so in a way, like, I mean, I'm always interested in a deeper reading of these things, of, you know, of popular culture, or, you know, what some, I don't know, it's not completely disconnected. I think it's all connected in some way.
The last thing I wanted to ask you before we move on, you had mentioned the paradoxes in your work.
Yeah.
And touching on that. And is there anything else you'd like to say about that before we move on?
I don't know. I guess I'm still in the process of figuring it out. So I'm just creating this fictional, you know, I guess this world I was sort of creating through this character was kind of real because I was doing these things, you know, these acts that he was doing. And now it's like, you know, now I'm creating this fictional backstory of, like, the mid-20th century through these books, you know, and it's implying, you know, these has all these other implications, you know, what it means in this conceptual space. So I don't know what it means. I mean, which maybe is fine, you know, and plenty of people make plenty of things without thinking this hard, so I don't know. Like, I don't... So maybe that's good to have it kind of be more, like, you know, some sort of paradox. Maybe that's... I guess I'm embracing that idea, or that my conceptual space is just really strange. And, you know, it doesn't all have to fit, I guess, in the exact same way. Basically, I just want to do... Right now I'm moving on to, like... I've done a lot of macro photography in the project. I sort of have this, like, assemblage of research stuff. So all these actual photographs of bugs and spiders I've taken at very close range and kind of other things related to it that I pin up on the wall, like 100 photographs or something. But now I'm doing these more... I'm kind of photographing web, like ruined webs, as a kind of, I guess, as a sort of take on ruin porn in a way, or, you know, in this sort of this obsession with ruins that everybody has, and I have it too. But now it's kind of getting, you know, called out as being an overplayed thing. I mean, this is only a minor part of why I'm doing this. But so I've been photographing webs, you know, from very, very closely, and then kind of making them into. Kind of making them into monochromatic things, so these are blue or red, so they kind of, and inverting them, so they have a very kind of otherworldly sort of structural look, but all from mundane kind of situations, like around houses and things. The first part of this project I did with the TH&B Collective, had a show in Hamilton where they invited people to show in this big warehouse space or former textile floor. So I went and photographed all the webs, not all, but some of the webs in the building, and then had in the little room that I had a cycling slideshow of these webs, and then sort of like some projections with overhead projectors of like spider faces and things like that, so of the species that were kind of in that building. So I'm sort of experimenting more with kind of projecting things and kind of more, and still like kind of really trying to find the cheapest possible way to make images on the wall at this point. But so I'm using a lot of overhead projectors and kind of like getting in before I was the actual actual photographs. I mean, the photographs were mostly these photographs of the banners hanging in spaces. So now I'm like, this is a different angle where I'm going into the space and photographing it and then like blowing up these things. But not, I don't know if I haven't decided. I've shot some great pictures of live spiders too, but I may only end up being just like the ruins, you know, because that's what it's interesting, like the, you know, these webs, like they don't, because of the enzymes in webs, they kind of don't decay very quickly or at all. So they're always there. And sometimes they go on like killing things like long after the spider's gone. So it's sort of, it's interesting. But so, and they're all, you know, they're everywhere, and they're kind of like these structures on top of our structures, and you know, so I mean, that's the phase I'm in right now.
So through our conversations, I feel you've already answered my next question, which is talking about a lot of your creative process. But is there anything else you'd like to say about, you know, and I'm sure that's a really hard question to answer because your work really takes so many different forms. Is there any way to navigate that?
Yeah, I don't know what to say about my creative
process. There's no one thing to say about what you do.
Yeah.
And it seems to really grow organically.
Yeah, well, there are certain times, you know, as soon as you get an idea and wish you'd had that idea a lot sooner, you know, or like, oh, I wish I should have added that to that show that I did, you know. But yeah, so it happens in an organic way. I mean, in a way, like now my main concern is like I feel like I'm not spending... A lot of it for me is I have to sit down and kind of just, you know, like write stuff or make notes and kind of make sketches and kind of just like brainstorm sort of. And I don't do that. I feel like I don't do that enough. I'm too caught up in like doing like my actual work or, you know, the other... Or whatever in my other kinds of information addiction. So I feel like... Well, there's a sense in which you always... At least I... Because I'm... You know, work for myself and have my art career thing. Like you could always be doing more. You know what I mean? You could always be more productive and always, you know, make more art. So I always feel like I'm trying to catch up, you know, or you know, whether there's the actual creation of the art, but then also just trying to move one's career forward, you know, and, you know, make money. So it's not like leaving an office or whatever and then you're done for the day because you're never done. So in a way, that's the sort of thing that stresses me out. Like, I need to, like, or, like, I think... It feels like these things happen too slowly sometimes. You know what I mean? The space in between changes in my work, you know? Or, like, I think, God, have I been on this project too long on this theme, you know? But now I don't know. I want to stick with this theme for a while longer. Like, I feel like I have a lot more projects. And maybe, like, maybe break it out a little bit from being under the same title, you know, and become just something else. But
you did mention a little bit about... building your art career. And so I'd kind of like to switch gears and talk a little bit about what you've had to go through building your art career. You mentioned that when you were working on the shopping cart project, by the time the book came out, you had already had an exhibition in Chelsea, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about what you've had to do personally to get your career to where you are today?
Well, I mean, in a way, like many people's careers, I suppose, you know, there's a series of sort of like good breaks and things that happened at the right time. And the main one for me was I was in a show in Hartford at Real Art Ways in 2004. And that ended up getting reviewed in the New York Times, or like the regional section of the New York Times. And that critic, Benjamin Ginocchio, who wrote that, I think it's now at Art Info, I think he's the editor there. Then he was asked by Black and White Gallery in Brooklyn at the time. Black and White Gallery and Lily Wei, the critic, we're doing a show where they were asking younger critics to pick younger artists to be in this group show. So Lily Wei asked Benjamin Ginocchio, and he picked me as the artist. So that's how I met up with Black and White Gallery, a gallery that I, you know, worked with a lot over the years. At the time, they were in Brooklyn, then they're in Chelsea, now they're back in Brooklyn. But so that kind of series of events led to me hooking up with the gallery. And, you know, then the gallery, like, took me to art fairs and sort of, like, I've had several shows there over the years at both of their locations. And that's really opened a lot of doors to a lot of things. And then I've also had, you know, a number of shows in nonprofit spaces and things like that as well. You know, a lot of things have come up because I've been around for a while. People find me a lot of the time, but I think I'm trying to be more aggressive about kind of pursuing opportunities and making things happen. It's now my main priority. Or now looking back, I think I should have probably pushed harder, you know what I mean, or like at various times. And there also sometimes you're at the mercy of, you know, you're with a gallery or something and they have a way that you think things should be done or you should do this thing and you think you should do that thing. And you know what I mean? It doesn't, and maybe those decisions didn't turn out to be the most, you know, profitable ones. So I'm hoping now, you know, at least I've done a fair amount of stuff over the years and I have this show in France in a small project space, but I'm working with a curator there. And it's interesting because in there, you know, the fact that I've shown in New York a lot seems more interesting. You know, it's more impressive to them. Here it's a very common, you know, it's sort of a dime a dozen thing, but there it's a little bit more exotic. So, you know what I mean? I'm hoping to maybe get into Europe more, see what happens.
But yeah, that's, you know, what I was going to ask you is Europe does carry this more exotic feel to it. And so is this show in France your first time exhibiting in Europe?
Well, I was in a group show in Moscow back in 2005. And that was really, I mean, that was a bit weird because it's, you know, a little bit, it's quite outside of, I guess, the what you consider the normal art world in a way. It was very cool, though. I mean, my gallerist in New York is Russian, so she was working with this foundation, and so a number of her artists from some other places were in this group, kind of meant to show younger American artists. And it was in this very, it was right across this huge art complex right across from Gorky Park. I mean, the show itself was not huge, but I went over for the show. I went with my dealer. And the cool thing is they used my image, which is, I think, an image of like a Topps cart. Maybe it's a Target cart from here, from Buffalo, like on top of a snowdrift. But they used that as the main image for the show. So it was on this like huge banner outside the, on the fence outside the building. So it was really weird to see this like Buffalo cart that millions of Moscow people are driving by every day right outside Gorky Park. It's really cool. You know, there are many things like, I mean, I've had a lot of these great things. Or like my book won the prize for the oddest book title of 2007. So it was like a literal, I mean, it was a very 15 minutes of fame type of thing, like where there was like an AP article that went to like basically every English language paper in the world talking about me winning this prize in this book. And you know, there were a few other like slightly more serious interviews and, or, you know, not serious, but like they're like a, I think it was an interview for The Independent, the British paper. And I mean, there were stories everywhere. I was interviewed on the BBC World Service. And even later on, a few years later on, it would keep popping up in England. And I did some other radio interviews, like the Chris Evans Drive Time Show. And he's a pretty huge figure in England. And who I remembered from living in England, like I remember who he was. But it's very weird. You know, I think there might have been some book about, there must have been, I think there was some story in Britain about odd books, and my book was featured in it. So somehow I kind of got on the list again to be talked to. And it was weird, you know, it's not like being interviewed as a serious artist. It's more like, you know, it's this very mainstream kind of thing. It's like, here's a guy who loves shopping goods so much he wrote a book about them. You know, it's the introduction. Then I have to like do the work of kind of saying what it is that I do, you know, in a funny and, you know, hopefully succinct way. But it was weird, as you know, to be standing in my kitchen and like speaking, being on the radio that 8 million people are listening to in England. And I also did like radio interviews in Australia and stuff like that. But you know, it's weird because it's like a fluky thing. It's not like your artwork is being appreciated. It's more like you've done something totally weird and they want to talk to a weirdo.
Well, and that's what's so interesting is that, I mean, what everyone else is perceiving as just this bizarre thing is your artwork. So like when you were having those interviews, did you try to express it all? Like, I'm not this crazy weirdo that I framed the book as, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I that's what I tried to do. I've never actually heard any of my interviews, because they always say they'll send you something and they never do. Yeah, I basically, yeah, go through that. You know, I explain, yeah, like what the project is, that I'm an artist and this is what it's about and why I did it, you know, in as smooth a way as possible. But the book itself, like, has a life of its own. Like, it just keeps popping up. But the weird thing is it doesn't, I mean, the sales, like, it didn't sell enough to get, I still don't get royalties from it. Like, it still hasn't paid back my advance on it. So it's, you know, it's interesting to see how well known something can be without actually turning into money.
I think that's called a cult classic.
Yeah, I guess so, because I've learned that too. Like, you can be, I think over the, you know, a lot of people have heard of that project one way or the other, you know, and it, you know, you can be like borderline well known and have it not, you know, like translate into like book sales. It's weird. But
is there anything you hope to achieve with your art? Or another way of saying that is, what do you hope the audience takes away from your art?
I don't know. I guess that's a little, I mean, the interesting thing is that, you know, I have my own vision of what I want people to take away from it. You know, they're my ideas that I'm trying to express and that I want, you know, have a specific way that I'd like them to be interpreted. And I think a lot of the times they aren't interpreted that way. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I guess I want people to get something out of it or be engaged by it, you know, and in a completely, like, self-interested way. I want them to like it in a, you know, to buy it or to, you know, promote it, or, you know what I mean, in that sense. But I mean, I don't know, I just hope they get some sense of what I'm getting at, you know. Although sometimes I think it's, especially with the larger installations, it's much more about, yeah, I don't know what they're getting. I mean, they're getting something, you know, they're getting some experiential kind of thing out of it. And, you know, there's a way in which people kind of, who maybe aren't super sophisticated about art, they end up being, you know, oh, I just love, you're so creative, or, you know what I mean, like, they just love that. You know, it's like, it's a very positive kind of thing. But it doesn't mean they may not be getting what I'm saying necessarily, but they just like the, wow, this is weird, crazy stuff. You know, like that kind of thing is a reaction that you get. So,
what is interesting too is that especially with the secondary occupants, with that, you know, in a lot of your installations, you're taking these you know, often ugly or scary insects that people normally react to with, you know, horror, at least, you know, squicky feelings. And yet you translate it into something that's very aesthetically pleasing. So I can see how that might be a response.
I think so. I mean, some people like have a hard time even reading the work as, you know what I mean, as knowing what the hell they're looking at. I mean, and I wanted it to be somewhat abstract in that way. So there's that bridge to get over to start with. You know what I mean? Even to get to, like, the whether it changes how they feel about that specific thing. And in a way, like, that's because that kind of totemic, you know, depiction is so removed from the way that one interacts with the spider itself, you know what I mean, how one sees it. I think this newer branch of the project where it's webs and stuff is a little bit more, you know, it's something people understand. You know, the shopping carts, people know that object and they know how it exists in the environment, or even if they don't. So when they look at the work, it's articulating something they've already, you know, they're already aware of, so they can connect to it really immediately. And when you're presenting someone with really completely new information, it's a very different process. So I think with the webs, it'll be a little bit more like, it'll be an easier connection, because people see them all the time and they brush them away. And so if I'm kind of like presenting them in this sort of like kind of grand way, I mean, not grand, but you know, it's a different way of seeing this mundane thing, I think it's a quicker connection.
I also just thought of a question I wanted to ask you that relates to something you were talking about earlier when you were talking about your these two major series that you've done. And in the first one, in the Guide to Stray Shopping Carts, you created a taxonomy using language and descriptions to sort of get to that. Whereas with the secondary occupants, in some ways you used graphic design to create a visual taxonomy of parts that you assembled into these different representations.
That's, yeah, in a way, it's not taxonomic in the same sense. You know what I mean? It's a set of representations, I think, but it doesn't have a... And a little bit, you know, where I have like all the animals' faces and spider faces, like, taken as a whole together, they have a little bit of that. Or at least a cataloging. You know, I wouldn't say a taxonomy, because it doesn't really do much work as far as differentiating them from one another. But it's more, yeah, more cataloging. I'd originally toyed or kind of tried an idea where I would do a text-heavy thing, but I would be, like, exploring, like, kind of trying to find a way to define the spaces that are in the, like, inside buildings that aren't kind of accurately described, or the way that these animals occupy space. But it just proved to be too difficult to be, like, clear and succinct. You know what I mean? It would have to be deliberately this, like, obtuse language that, you know, I didn't think the payoff was enough in a way. And with the, when you're writing stuff like that, if it doesn't, you know, if you can't get it into these, like, clear, you know, these, clear names that kind of connect, it's not going to work. So yeah, in a way, it's like it's not as taxonomical, but it's still like kind of like peering into this other world, I guess.
You're living here in Buffalo, where you were born and raised, but you've also...
I was not born here.
Not born here. Where were you born?
I was born in Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay, cool.
So I moved here when I was 11.
Okay. Do you feel that influenced you?
Maybe. I guess only in the sense that, you know, it's a pretty, like, arty, you know, academic community in Madison. So, I mean, I suppose I have some influence on that. Or, you know, that kind of positive feeling towards that kind of thing. Or that always seemed like a, you know, whatever the arts seemed important. But, I mean, you know, my father came to teach here at Buff State in 1984. So I think my really important formative years were here. So, I'm from here is the way I think of it.
Okay, so you're from here. And yet you've exhibited beyond here in many ways, and, you know, your focus is beyond Buffalo. I want to ask you, what are some of your needs as an artist that the larger community can help you achieve? And I'm not sure if that community is Buffalo, if it's beyond Buffalo, if it's the Fine Art Network.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of different needs. I guess, I mean, the most beneficial one, I mean, you know, I guess what... You know, the Rothschild and the Albright, to some degree, like what they... You know, it's just beneficial to put Buffalo on the map in a lot of ways. I mean, it's not an insignificant thing, you know. And or much further along than, you know, I suppose a lot of other cities our size. But, you know, that just establishing that idea that things can happen here and people can make art here that gets seen elsewhere. And, I mean, I've always been very upfront about living in Buffalo, you know, when I'm out in the world or whatever, or and always trying to talk it up and everything. And some people don't do that. You know, some people, like, you know, try to pretend like they live in New York or whatever and that sort of thing. But I'm all for it. So I don't know. I guess that's the main thing. I mean, you know, it would be nice. I have pretty realistic expectations, though. Like, you know, I don't think there's a great... I mean, I suppose you could develop more of a collector class here or more get more average people to be interested in visual art. So I mean, that's doable. But I've never had any real aspirations to, like, make money here from art. I mean, even the work that I've sold to Buffalo collectors has been in, you know, in Miami or whatever. Like, it hasn't been here. You know, I mean, it's been through my gallery or whatever. You know what I mean? So it's, you know, there isn't much of a... The commercial scene is very tiny here. So, but I don't think that that's the strong point anyway. You know, I think it's much better just to have an environment for people to live and make work, you know. And you know, to draw, like Beyond In did to some degree, you know, have people, international people, looking at Buffalo, I think would be good.
As an artist, what do you feel that Buffalo provides you with? Why are you here in Buffalo?
My original intention was to come back and move to New York, like once I kind of got some design skills. And one thing led to another, and I ended up staying. And I, for a long time, though, thinking about moving to New York, and then when I got picked up by the gallery in 2005, that took the pressure off of that, or I had a way to do things. And I like living here because it's cheaper, and I have a really big house and a big studio and all of that stuff. And I really like being part of this community, and I like the quality of life here a lot. But I do think the one thing I've thought, obviously spent a lot of time thinking about this, the one thing I really lose out on is if I lived in New York, I would just... There'd be a lot of opportunities coming from meeting people in social situations, which I don't have. I try to make up for that, you know, by going to New York and Miami and stuff, and have benefited from that and met people and made connections and things like that. I don't think if it weren't for the internet, I don't think I would be here in that sense. I mean, trying to do what I'm trying to do, I don't think I could, you know, like 25 years ago. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely going to stay, but I think I need to... I still need to reach out a lot. You know, you have to be very active with reaching out and making things happen elsewhere.
Moving forward, what is going to help you advance your career?
The interesting thing about this world or career is that you can have some level of success, and then it doesn't mean that anything is coming after it. You know, so for me, like, I think there are not a lot of people who've seen my work in various venues. I mean, New York and here, and like it or like what I do or are familiar with me as an artist, but I've sold a fair amount of things over the years, but it's not to the point where, like, I'm someone who has a market. Do you know what I mean? There's not people that seek out the work. Like, they have to see it in the right environment and buy it, right? There's no one, like, tracking me down to buy this stuff. So, like, I'm clearly in this certain tier, and how to get to the next one is the difficult thing. I need to do it soon, because I'm 39 now. And, you know, there's this invisible line at 40 that maybe it's all fiction, but, you know, it doesn't hurt to to assume that it's true and push as hard as possible. I have some good opportunities, and I think at this point, you know, now looking back, you know, I think my resume has at least got enough stuff on it that I think that'll help me as I go forward. It's all unknowns, so...
So, like you said, you know, you're at this possible invisible line, but you're also at a, you know, this midpoint in your career. What advice do you have for emerging artists? Maybe artists who are either just coming out of either their BFA or even their MFA and are thinking about a lot of these concepts and the first steps they have to take.
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, it's weird, I don't feel like I'm in my mid-career. And I started pretty late, really, in the scheme of things. Like, I didn't properly have a show until I was, like, 28 or something. You know what I mean? So, like, I feel like I wish it started sooner, you know, on all of this stuff. I mean, because, you know, college was pretty much, I mean, I wasn't doing any of this, you know what I mean? And then it took me a few years to get a handle on things. And then, you know, by the time I... Yeah, so, like, I mean, I'm sort of, I still have that feeling of being, like, I've just started, even though it's been, like, 10. I guess my first real show was at the Olean Public Library, which is in 2001.
Can I ask, how long did you stay in Hartford after you graduated?
No, I was in Hampshire.
Hampshire, I'm sorry.
In Massachusetts. I didn't stay there at all. I went immediately to England for 6 months, working, and then to Ireland for another 7 months, and then came back to Buffalo, and that was pretty much it. Yeah. So in a way, so it's been like 12, yeah, so I guess it's 11 years of this professionally, if you can call it that. So anyway, but in other words, it's, you know, I guess that is a long time, but you don't know when you're not emerging anymore. Do you know what I mean? Because...
Well, you've got dealer representation.
No.
Writers in New York, and, you know.
That's true. It probably is my mid, or at least it's a real, you know, thing now. But my advice to these young people, I don't know, it's very weird because I came to things in such a weird way. Do you know what I mean? I don't really know what it's like to, like, leave an MFA program. You know what I mean? Although I do feel like if you're going to do an MFA program, you know, do one, and your interest is being an artist as opposed to just getting an MFA to teach, you know, then go to a school that has, you know, is in a location-wise and where, you know, where you're going to be hooked up with good people, you know, because really that's more important than anything, you know, is making those connections, you know. And I don't, you know, going to getting an MFA in the middle of nowhere, if you're not really seriously... Whatever, you just gotta take every advantage you can. But and I think there are plenty of people that go to school and want to be artists, you know, and there are very few of them that make it, you know, even to that first tier of, like, having kind of a career and showing stuff, because it takes a tremendous amount of energy just to make something happen when you're doing it without any money, you know, without anyone paying for it, you know, all of that sort of thing, and no one's telling you, you know, you have to do it on your own. You have to be self-motivated. And I think a lot of people, or my observation anyway, is that a lot of people just don't have enough energy. You know, like, I've known plenty of talented people that just don't end up following through. You know what I mean? Or, like, because it's really easy to not do anything, and then it's 5 years later or whatever, and what are you going to do? The same thing with design, too. I mean, there's all sorts of people that, you know, you have to be pretty self-motivated and to do really interesting creative design and stuff like that, or to carve out a space like that for yourself. I think you have to be pretty motivated. Like, you do this stuff on your own all the time. You know what I mean? Not just waiting for stuff to happen. But that being said, I mean, I feel like I've, like, been too slack in the... You know, I feel like I should be doing more every day.
My last question, which I'm not sure if I sent to you, is there anything that you wish you had known, perhaps, back in 2001, you know, during your Olean show, that you know now?
Yes, because at Olean happened... That show opened 2 days before 9/11, so I wish I'd known. So that show got forgotten about super fast by me and everybody else. Yeah, all kinds of stuff I wish I'd known. I mean, like I said, like, I did this, you know, I wish I'd started earlier, you know, like, I wish I'd been a little more focused in college on what I was really all about, you know what I mean, and what I wanted to do.
And when you say started earlier, like, how many years are you talking? Are you talking, like... Like, you wish you had gone to school for fine arts?
A little bit, although, I mean, I do appreciate that I went to school in a different way, and I don't know, in a way, like, I feel like I, you know, I like the way the things I ended up doing, so I don't know what I've been completely had that beaten out of me in art school. I don't know, you know what I mean? I don't know what, it would have been a completely different trajectory. Like, I don't think I would have done, you know, all these choices, like, I don't know if I would. I probably wouldn't have done this shopping cart project if I hadn't lived in Buffalo, or, you know, things like that. So it's impossible to kind of make a judgment. I did the International Studio Program residency, which Hallwalls used to facilitate, and I did it very early in my career, like, where I applied for it and I got it, and it was really weird because I was, you know, just, I'd really done that Olean show and a few other things, and I was in with all these professional artists. And in retrospect, like, if I'd known more what I know now about that world, I think I could have capitalized on that more. I mean, I think I got a lot out of it, and it was a great time to work. I was there for, like, in New York for 3 months in 2002. But yeah, like, if that had happened a couple years later, I think I could have capitalized on it. You know, I ended up concentrating on, like, a little bit on the wrong body of work, and, like, you know, so it, you know, things like that. But you don't, whatever. It's very difficult. But as far as your original question, like, how much later? Like, so that 2004 thing was a... The show in Hartford, which really kind of got the ball rolling at Real Art Ways, that was the show of, like, 30, like, artists who were under 30. And so I think I was 29 when I did that. And that was, like, when my break came. So, you know what I mean? Like, not that it's that old, but people that are coming out of, like, Columbia undergrad or, you know, graduate school, you know, a lot of them are like 4 years or 5 years younger than me. But I'm also starting without like a launch pad like graduate school that's, you know, doing kind of hooking things up. So that's why I feel a little behind.
Julian, what's your favorite food?
Oh, I don't know. Favorite food?
What's your favorite buffalo food?
Well, I guess I really do like beef on weck. No, actually, you know what? I think the chicken finger sub needs to be elevated to the same level as like beef on weck and wings. Like, I think it's a great creation.
Any chicken finger sub?
I guess I'm mostly the one, I think of Jim's Steakout mostly. So.
What's your favorite pizza place in Buffalo?
Casa de Pizza.
Nice.
And it's funny because I remember like when we came to look for a house in Buffalo in 1984, we stayed at the Hotel Lenox. And I remember like, you know, I remember eating at Casa de Pizza and like my sister and I were like grossed out by it because it was like so saucy and like it was sort of weird to us, like coming from, I guess, what we're used to in Wisconsin. And but I'd later really come to love that quality of it. And I also usually like watch like the playoff hockey games at Casa de Pizza and stuff like that. But we also, when we came back to move into our house, we all stayed at the Hotel Lenox, but the people hadn't left the house yet, so we like had everything in a U-Haul truck in the parking lot there, and like we're there for like 5 days waiting for the people to vacate, with my dad looking out the window with the truck full of stuff.
Well, Julian, thank you so much for coming in to do an interview with us for the Living Legacy Project at the Birchfield Penny Arts Center.
Well, thank you for having me. Yeah.